I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. And thank you so much for rolling, y'all. So we're going to talk today more about Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And I wrote up a little paper last night. I think I like writing it all out for you, even though I like to go off script and play it by ear. It's kind of fun to flex these muscles again. So thanks for being with me here. And, you know, as PJ Morton and them said in the last hour, practicing. That's what we have to do. We just have to practice all of these things that we imagine. So I'm going to read to you my paper and we'll just go off a little bit, okay? So Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964. And we're taking a look at his Nobel lecture delivered at the University of Oslo in Norway on December 11, 1964. We have concluded our book club selection, A Knock at Midnight, Inspiration from the Great Sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. As we glean from the sermons, we would often take into consideration the times in which Dr. King wrote them, who he was as a man, what he and his family went through during their time in the civil rights movement, what the nation and the world was experiencing at the time. And I encourage, again, all y'all to go over to take a listen to these previous shows at In the Cab Radio on Mixcloud.com and YouTube.com. Access is free. There's really good information and conversations with some fellow DJs here that I won't necessarily repeat today, but might make reference to, okay? And if you're curious, I mean, it takes nothing to just click on over. And if you forget, In the Cab Radio is everything. Just In the Cab Radio at Gmail. You can send me a note. Instagram. I don't really do TikTok that much, but I'm trying. Anyway, I know I will continue to use Dr. King's work as a basis for my own. Like, this project has changed me. So as I'm presenting today as somewhat of a conclusion to the previous volume in the book club, it is by no means the last we will hear of the great Reverend Doctor, okay? But I do want to speak about a revelation that I had while reading this Nobel lecture. As I've mentioned it before, last night it just hit harder. King was a prophet, which means he came with a prophecy. His prophecy was the subject of all the sermons in A Knock at Midnight. And it is again brought forth in the conclusion of the Nobel lecture at Oslo. And here it is. Mankind's survival is dependent upon man's ability to solve the problems of racial injustice, poverty, and war. The solution of these problems is in turn dependent upon man's squaring his moral progress with his scientific progress and learning the practical art of living in harmony. Okay? And I'm going to pause there from my pages and just reflect on this for a minute. He was more than a man with an idea. He was more than a man with a dream. He was more than a man with a message. I think that he was instilled here for this very brief time that the world was able to bask in the light of his wisdom and enlightenment precisely to deliver this message. Our survival as a species is dependent upon our ability to solve the problems of racial injustice, poverty, and war. Our survival is dependent upon this. No one here can disagree with that. Show me the figures where you think that's not true. Every time he got in front of anyone, that was burning inside of him to let us know that we can save ourselves as a species. All we got to do is take this seriously, not just for some, because for some, the entire planet will not survive. It will never work just for some. the solution, because he was not a man with just pointing at problems. Prophets come with an array of possible outcomes if the prophecy is not heeded. And we don't have a timeline. We don't know when, right? So that's why people are like, oh, the psyche don't know anything. Oh, it's a joke. Because we don't really grasp all the angles. It's like a kaleidoscope, life and existence on this planet. It's, you don't really know which image to focus on. It's a big intersecting picture and infinite possibilities. So it's easy to pick the easy road. You want to pick the easy road and not really look at as many options as we have. That doesn't make the prophecy invalid. You understand? Your ability to take action, your inability to do something about the knowledge that you have, it does not make the prophecy inaccurate. The solution that Dr. King supported is to square our moral progress with our scientific progress. Dr. King believed there was a lag between our morality and our scientific progress. He specifically, in his Nobel lecture, The Quest for Peace and Justice, he specifically called it a lag. And he thought that the main thing that we need to do is correct that lag, that glitch, that gap. I think we would all like to live a good life, free of exploitation, violence, abuse, oppression, lovelessness. The vast majority of humans on the planet today, I feel safe to say, are discontent, to say the least, about the state of humanity, other life, and the planet itself. We would like a better world, one of safety, justice, love, harmony, ease of living, and dare I say peace. Even as there can be no lasting peace without justice, peace is still the ultimate goal. Since the proliferation of nuclear weapons, we have been in a constant threat of global annihilation. This may sound exaggerated, but I assure you that it is not. At the time of King's lecture in 1964, four countries possessed nuclear weapons and were testing their capabilities regularly, so often that they had to do a limited testing agreement of 1963. They had to tell countries after they did these tests on people, they realized that all that fallout was having such a dire effect on human health and the health of the planet that these countries who possessed nuclear weapons and countries who did not, mainly the Soviet Union and the United States, managed to forge, as they do, an unenforceable agreement that they wouldn't shoot these weapons off to test them in certain places. So they limited where they could do it. Okay. But it was going on a lot. And these countries that were doing this were the United States, Soviet Union, United Kingdom, and France. Today, there are 9 countries with nuclear weapons, and the global nuclear warhead stockpile is above 12,000, according to the Federation of American Scientists in a March 2024 article. The United States and the Soviet Union control 88% of this inventory, with 84% of the total number currently available for military use. Today, these weapons of mass destruction are owned by the countries mentioned previously, and please add China, Israel, Pakistan, and North Korea. All of the countries who are doing great by their citizenry, by the way. All of the countries where I want to be alone in a room with their leaders. I don't think so. Given the fact that we have known for decades that threat of nuclear war poses to humanity as a species, governments, madmen, have continued to pursue it. King's words ring like prophecy to me because it foretells a possible future in true prophetic form, also offers a solution. The proliferation of peace. That's what he calls it. We have to proliferate peace. Dr. King refers to the story of the Greek hero Ulysses for an analogy. You know, we love story time here. Ulysses and his crew were accosted by sirens, whose song would drive them irresistibly first to lust, then to madness, and ultimately death. The siren song. Lust, madness, and ultimately death. The Argonauts made no progress for quite some time, and many lives were lost. They sought many methods to resist the siren songs. The crew stuffed their ears with wax. Ulysses told them to strap him to the masthead or whatever. The sail thing. I don't know. I'm not a sailor, but he was like, I've got to drive the ship. Tie me up. I'll be the guy. But none of this went over very well. Many lives were lost. And they took a lot of time off their journey. They were distracted from their mission. Eventually, they took on board the hero Orpheus, whose ethereal music skills outperformed the sinister siren song. King would say, when Orpheus sang, who could listen to the sirens? We must fix our vision not merely on the negative expulsion of war, but upon the positive affirmation of peace. In short, we must shift the arms race into a peace race. We have the will and determination to mount such a peace offensive. We will unlock hitherto tightly sealed doors of hope and transform our imminent cosmic elegy into a psalm of creative fulfillment. He had a way with words, a poet, alliteration. What mass media does now is like make jokes of people who do that. Great leaders like Jesse Jackson, representatives and champions like the Reverend Al Sharpton. The truth of the matter is that it's in our blood to create. So proliferation of peace sounds like a catchphrase or advertisement, but it's serious business, y'all. It's serious business. And I wanted to cite the source real quick. The original document, not my homework essay book report, but the original document is at nobelprize.org/prizes/peace/1964/King. But you can just throw it in a search engine. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., Nobel Lecture, nobelprize.org. Okay, nobelprize.org. And I appreciate them for having this archive there, because a lot of places just had excerpts, and the entire speech is on their website. And that's where I'm quoting Dr. King from. So Dr. King goes on to declare that we must now give an overriding loyalty to mankind as a whole in order to preserve the best in our individual societies. When I speak of love, I am not speaking of some sentimental and weak response, which is little more than emotional bosh. I am speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Now, these are two quotes separate in the speech, but I put them together in my notes because they go together. Like right now, we have to have an overriding loyalty to mankind as a whole. Whatever. Don't get caught up in the semantics, okay? It was 1964. Humankind, whatever you want to call it. All of us here on this blue marble, okay? With skin in the game. And I think there's those beyond the veil that are working with us. We can't see. Okay. They're, we only pick up, you know, a couple of light waves with our eyeballs. We don't know all of the entities that are working with us here to preserve or destroy life on this planet. You see what I'm saying? Some people we can see. They're up on podiums and they're either doing bad or they're doing good. But there's a lot of us here on this planet that got to step up and put everybody first. And it's not just, oh, peace and love, you know. We in America do not live in a culture that knows how to love. And the evidence surrounds us. I don't really need to go into it. You can go to IndyCab Radio at Mixcloud and you can see the discussions that we did on Bell Hooks All About Love, New Visions. Because that's the real deal. We get into what I call in the series revolutionary love, but really it's just love. And it is a true effort, extending oneself beyond modes of comfort and good feelings, of serotonin boosts and erotics, into addressing deep woundings that we have been programmed to abide in the name of capitalism and supremacy. Addressing the real mess that we are in, personally and as a society, and moving past revenge, punishment, humiliation, that done to ourselves, and that which we want to do to others, it takes bravery and vision to see past that, to move past the desire for revenge, and to step out of the way when someone is being vengeful towards us, to stand in front of someone that I've wronged and take the punch, work it out, or to avoid the conflict in a way that is healing. Hey man, you don't have to hit me back. What can I do to help tend that wound that I opened in you? That's a lot of work and communication. It's a lot of responsibility taking. Punishing ourselves, punishing others. We want to do that person to person and nation to nation, group to group. We want to do that. We are hung up on it. And it takes a lot of energy to figure out that something else is possible. King says, I do not wish to minimize the complexity of the problems that need to be faced in achieving disarmament and peace. But I think it is a fact that we shall not have the will, the courage, and the insight to deal with such matters unless in this field we are prepared to undergo a mental and spiritual re-evaluation, a change of focus, which will enable us to see that the things which seem most real and powerful are indeed now unreal and have come under the sentence of death. We need to make a supreme effort to generate the readiness, indeed the eagerness, to enter into the new world which is now possible. We will not build a peaceful world by following a negative path. I'm going to take a breath there, because that line actually opens another paragraph, which I bring a quote of three sentences. So I'm going to stop before we get into that one and just go back to the one about the work. It made me tired just reading that paragraph. Mental and spiritual reevaluation? Jeez, is this Futurama? Can I just pull up and, you know, y'all just go ahead and put me on a conveyor belt and just download the new information? And then I just take a really long nap and wake up rebooted and all systems are upgraded. Because sitting with myself doing that mental and spiritual reevaluation just on my own life, that's a lot of work and it makes me really tired. I don't know about you guys. And then we're talking culturally to do that. And I was starting to think about, and we're going to get into this in the next bit, about what we consume. We talk about it a lot, and I feel like we talk about it a lot and a lot and a lot, that, you know, it's almost just like a thing to talk about. It's become a part of our life. Like, we could look at COVID, how we now, they just like, you got to live with COVID now. Okay. We're just going to fold that into the conversation. So let's just fold into the conversation consumerism. We're just going to make that word so common that it loses its meaning, because it has to do with things that we enjoy. You know, like you go to the doctor and they're like, all that stuff that tastes good, you can't have it no more. All that stuff that's great, that gives you an instant response of pleasure. Not all of it. It's just the stuff that was manufactured by corporations with chemicals to exactly trigger that response in you so you could buy more. You probably shouldn't be having that. So you need to rewire yourself to enjoy natural food, an apple, as opposed to apple flavored drink. You know, whatever. I mean, I don't know if anybody likes apple flavored drink, but you know what I'm trying to say. So when I talk about consuming things, a lot of times it's stuff that I do enjoy, and I'm trying to figure out how to keep it in perspective without tainting the vibrational pool. If you are on that level and you understand what I'm saying, not trying to cut people out who aren't interested in energetics and metaphysics, but the vibration of, I'm just going to use the example of, say, trauma core horror. No offense to all my homies that love that. And what we trigger in ourselves, if we're not aware of a mass culture, if we're not balancing out, we're just hearing the siren song. Where's Orpheus? How about that? That's the thing. Consuming more of Orpheus's tune than the siren song. And I just want to give weight back to these terms. King says, we will not build a peaceful world by following a negative path. It is not enough to say we must not wage war. It is necessary to love peace and to sacrifice for it. I want to ask a question to the class. Sacrifice what? Sacrifice what? What do you think that it takes for peace? I have a few suggestions, like ego, bloodlust, revenge, and those things we were talking about before. The sacrifice, retaliation, and ego. As the aforementioned countries race to amass more nuclear warheads, according to the Federation of American Scientists, okay, they say the U.S. is not. That we're slowly disarming. I'm not in it. They got the website, okay? I have my suspicions. I mean, let me just go ahead and put it out there. Why do we need to have more if we just have Israel have theirs in our name? How about that? How many of these countries that have these nuclear weapons are proxies for us? So how many weapons do we really have if we're giving them away or selling them or trading them with our allies, who are quite frankly out of their minds, and our opposition? Whatever, they're nuts. Anyway, I digress. So the Federation of American Scientists says that we're disarming slowly. But the rest of those countries are continuing to look to amass more weapons. And we must not neglect Dr. King's warning and offered solution. It is more relevant now than it ever was, as we are more armed to destruction more than three times than when this lecture was delivered. And when I say more than three times, that's just the countries or occupying forces, if you would say, that are that are armed. That's not actually the actual number of warheads that exist on the planet now, as opposed to 1964. That could probably be more. You know, they just got into a boom of making them. I didn't get the number on the actual weapons, but this is armed countries. So I'm going to start to draw to my own conclusion here and wrapping it up. Thank you so much for being with us. You might ask, what can I do about nuclear disarmament? Now, I'm going to tell you that there are a lot of organizations out there still doing the work. I am middle-aged, and I remember in the 80s, the organizations that were really focused on nuclear disarmament, a lot of them from the 70s and the 60s are still doing the work today. All you have to do is go looking for that information, okay? So that's one thing you can do. You can just become a part of other organizations, peace movement. What I will give you some easy things that you can do within yourself, and that's just take these ideas and integrate them. It's about the proliferation of peace. And you can talk about it with everyone that you know. Not to worry about popping those peas on the microphone. Just enjoy your life and reflect on the proliferation of peace. Be the representative of your group. Be the ambassador that you want to see in the world. Reflect on your hate, your greed, your fear, your programming to think the worst, your programming to doubt, the pathways that trauma has carved into your brain and being, the programming. Believe that another world is here and that you have a part to play in creating it, with people and experiences that may scare and annoy you. The things that make you uncomfortable are sometimes the people and experiences you need to repave those pathways or unpave them and return to a natural state of being, of unity with creator and creations. Create as much beauty as possible. Hear Orpheus's song. Ask to bring it through you. Give people something else to listen to look at, to believe in, than the programming of the Dementors of Doom. It sounds like a little thing. Everybody might not like the art you have to give. What you say or sing or speak might not necessarily resonate with everyone, but there are 8 billion people on this planet. And beauty, we need more beauty. We need more. And that goes back to the frequency. Even if you create something and leave it somewhere, in your basement, if it's biodegradable, in the woods, it is the energy that you create when you are creating something from a place of joy, from a place of love, whether it's just a cup of tea for a neighbor that you may love or not like, that moment of heart-centered energy, you know the feeling. Dr. King calls it, I wasn't going to go down here. This is a totally a vamp. But right here in the first paragraph of his lecture, he says, occasionally in life, there are those moments of unutterable fulfillment, which cannot be completely explained by those symbols called words. Their meaning can only be articulated by the inaudible language of the heart. Such is the moment I am presently experiencing. And I think he sums up what I'm trying to say. The alternative is that we can do nothing. Just keep doing what we're doing. Just focus blinders on. All things move toward their end, to quote Nick Cave. Me, I'm a Lord of the Rings fan as well. The age of men is over. The time of the orc has come. Y'all remember Lord of the Rings, Return of the King? That's Gothmog at Osgiliath. Yeah, the darkest before the dawn. Knock at midnight. Gondor was knocking. It was midnight. Seasons are real timetables. But I didn't sign up for the demolition of an entire planet, people, or species. So I'm going to stick with the MLK quotes. I'm going to listen to all of Nick Cave, especially right now in spooky season. And I'm going to watch Lord of the Rings every time I need to check out a dragon and a quest for good across perils unknown. But I'm still going to go with King. Because as he says, history is cluttered with the wreckage of nations and individuals that pursued the self-defeating path of hate. Love is the key to the solution of the problems of the world. I would also say greed, the self-defeating path of greed, which fosters hate. We just heard George Harrison, another song called Beware of Darkness that he wrote. I played it Concrete Blonde version last week. Beware greedy leaders who take you where you should not go. As you rally this season, listen between the lines. Do not fall back asleep and do not let your soul identity politic allow you to let your guard down about what the true directive of domination is about. King was very clear in his time about the global revolution that was happening concurrently. We are in a similar time when all the nations of the world are at war. All of the peoples of the world must find humanity and solidarity around peace. The people only want to live and thrive. It is the rhetoric of the greedy that steal our hearts and minds from the path of harmony. Now that's all me. You can have it. Steal it. Come. You got to come over to Mixcloud or YouTube. Click like, and then write that quote down. We can do this. Another world is here. There will be more dark times and more setbacks. We have been through some measure of this before, and due to the efforts of ourselves in the past and those who came before us, we are forging a way forward. And on this note, I would like to conclude with a quote from Dr. King's Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech, which he gave in Oslo one day before this lecture. Recordings of it are widely available. It's only about 12 minutes. I deeply respect that Dr. King regarded himself as a steward of the Nobel Peace Prize Award, accepting it on behalf of the entire civil rights movement in the United States. He honors what he calls the real heroes of the freedom struggle, those whom he names the devotees of nonviolence who have moved so courageously against the ramparts of social injustice and who in the process have acquired a new estimate of their own human worth. He knew he wasn't doing this alone. That's why they couldn't pierce him. Because he was made of millions. And he gave each person in the movement their credit. He always represented everyone. Here's a quote. I accept this award today with an abiding faith in America and an audacious faith in the future of mankind. I refuse to accept despair as the final response to the ambiguities of history. I refuse to accept the idea that the isness of man's present nature makes him morally incapable of reaching up for the eternal oughtness that forever confronts him. I refuse to accept the idea that man is mere flotsam and jetsam in the river of life, unable to influence the unfolding events which surround him. I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I refuse to accept the cynical notion that nation after nation must spiral down a militaristic stairway into the hell of nuclear annihilation. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. That is why right, temporarily defeated, is stronger than evil triumphant. I believe that even amid today's mortar bursts and whining bullets, there is still hope for a brighter tomorrow. I believe that wounded justice lying prostrate on the blood-flowing streets of our nations, can be lifted from this dust of shame to reign supreme among the children of men. Give it up, bro. He believed in us. I believe in us. Okay? No matter how dark it gets. It's what the revolution is for. I love y'all. Thank you so much.